Mrajuhtuden.
Mrajuhtuden.
Welcome to the Anonymous Eskimo Project, a program where I have candid conversations with guests about difficult but important Indigenous topics such as mental health, sobriety, recovery, and missing and murdered Indigenous people. These difficult topics need to be brought to the light, not only to educate, but to uplift our Indigenous relatives. Oyana for joining me. I'm your host, Ralph Sara. On today's show, I have Dr. Charlene Akpik Apak. Charlene is Inupiaq. Her family is from White Mountain and Golovin. She is the force behind Data for Indigenous Justice, a nonprofit organization that tracks data related to the crisis of missing and murdered Indigenous women, girls, and Two-Spirit peoples in Alaska. As DIJ's executive director and co-founder, she serves a guiding light for those striving to create a more just and equitable world. Charlene is also the Director of Gender Justice and Healing at Native Movement. Charlene has served in many spaces as an advocate for Indigenous women, Indigenous sovereignty, climate justice, and Indigenous rights to health and well-being. Charlene is a lifelong learner in both her cultural traditions and decolonizing academia. She earned her bachelor's in American Ethnic Studies with a minor in Gender, Women, and Sexuality Studies, a master's in Alaska Native Studies and Rural Development, and a doctorate in Indigenous Studies. Charlene gratefully resides in Anchorage on the territories of the Dena'ina peoples. Here she has taught the Inupiaq language and is part of the Kingikmute dance group with her son. And on this episode, Charlene and I have a conversation about missing and murdered Indigenous women, girls, and Two-Spirit peoples. So guys, please help me welcome Dr. Charlene Akpik Apak. Hi Charlene, how are you?
Uvlalo, talk doing good.
Thank you so much for agreeing to come on the show.
Yeah, Koyana, happy to be here.
Can you go ahead and please introduce yourself so the listeners can get to know you?
Sure. Is it okay if I share in my Inupiaq language?
Yes.
And I can translate?
Of course.
Okay. All right. Uvla lota, good morning. Uvanga Charlene Apak, Inupiaq Siska Akpik, Chinik Mugurunga, Sulina Chirvik Mugurunga. So my name is Charlene Upbuck. My Inupiaq name that I go by is Akpik, and my family is originally from Golovin in White Mountain, Alaska.
I want to ask you about the Alaska Missing Persons Report that you compiled. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, so I can share, you know, before that report came out in 2021, I can share how that kind of came about. You know, back in, I think it was 2016, Canada put out their first report, and we saw what was happening over there with our relatives in Canada, and they were calling attention to the issue. And so many of us, unfortunately, here in Alaska, were really resonating with what we were seeing over there. We were like, whoa, that's happening here too, right? And so in 2018, there were local organizers, community members who wanted to say, hey, this, you know, let's raise awareness about this too. And they were organizing a rally at the Alaska Federation of Natives, you know, when we all come together as a state. And they wanted to read the names of loved ones who were missing or murdered here from Alaska, and only to find there was no list, there was no way to pull data at the state. No one was tracking except for us, right? We know our own truths and our own stories. And so people from across the state, families came and just shared their names, shared their stories with us, and that became the database. We wrote all those names down, and those are the names that we read at that rally in 2018 at AFN. And so after that, the list was given to me to care for. And so I just, you know, kind of kept adding on to it as I saw things happen on social media or across the state or in the news, you know. And as the awareness grew, I was like, okay, we have to use this information for change. You know, that's the power of data. That's the power of information. And so in 2020, Data for Indigenous Justice was founded. And I have a really fantastic board and staff I also want to give a shout out to, because it's not just me, right? This is done with many, many people and partners. But we founded in 2020 and really wanted to just use information for power, for what it is, and speak our truths and have that information back up our stories that we already know. And so we did that. And in 2021, the report that you're referring to, it's called We Are Calling to You, and it's found on our website. But we put that out to share what we had learned so far and to put out an actual number that represented, again, what we knew to already be true. And so in 2021, you know, we share how we gathered that information, some of the complications with how, why, and how it's hard to do this. And we put out the first numbers, the first Alaska-specific numbers for missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls, and that was 229. And this is a long story. Can I keep going?
Yes.
Okay, I was like, you just got to cut me off if I'm going off. But, you know, when I was pulling those last numbers, right, cleaning the data, I was like, okay, last pull before we finalize this report. And that number was 229. And it's like, well, we all know that number, right? That's the number of tribes we have here in Alaska. And it was no coincidence, right? And I felt like that was meant to be. And that was where we were at in that moment, to show that all of us are impacted and all of us are affected. And so that number you'll see in the report, but that was the first report that was put out in 2021. And since then, we haven't put out a new report yet. But, you know, we continue to document these numbers. And, you know, when I say numbers, we know that, right, these are actual stories and lives of real people who are missing and very much missed.
Mm-hmm.
But we continue to document what was happening here. And today we have over 1,000 cases that are documented in our database. So that's kind of the, you know, the origin story of this, coming from the community directly, from our people, our stories, and how we can use that, you know, shifting that into a language where we can use it to back up what we already know as our truths.
Wow. It must have taken you a lot of your time to do this. Can you tell me about, you know, the hours and the time it took you to do this work?
Yes, it's a lot. There's, what happens is, right, the state agencies can and should be responsible, of course, for tracking, and for lots of different reasons, you know, there's inadequate data. And so some of it is FOIA requests, which is Freedom of Information Act requests for folks out there. And that is very tedious. I don't know if any, you know, maybe as a writer, then you might do that sometimes. But, you know, you can be denied FOIA requests for any number of reasons, and then you have to start again, and then you have to track them. And then if you do get the data, you got to cross-reference it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So that alone is a pretty big task, and I've been fortunate to have some help. I've had volunteers help my org, and I've also had data analysts. I've hired data analysts to help me do that, because it became so much. I was doing it at all hours, you know, and cross-referencing data is incredibly tedious. The other way that is that we update the database and like see these names is through social media, right? Oftentimes, sadly, if someone goes missing, you see it first on social media. Families are like, have you seen my so-and-so, you know, my niece, my nephew, my kid, whoever it might be. And so that's for what it is, better or for worse, you know, social media tends to be actually a very accurate database of lifetime what's going on. We can see that before families file reports or things like that, you know. Same thing if someone's found or if they get information, it's coming from social media. And so mining social media and like seeing and what's going on there is also another way that we track, and then through story, of course, too. And that's pretty powerful. I've had elders tell me names of loved ones from back in the day, like the 60s, let's say, of things they remember in their community. And it's not in digitized data, or it wasn't ever documented, or it wasn't investigated, or it wasn't in the news, you know. And so in that way, we have a very accurate database that's very different than state agencies, because it's comprehensive. And again, we operate off of our truth.
Yeah, and it's so, so important. So important work. Now, I want to make this clear. The Department of Public Safety, which is basically the Alaska State Troopers, have been taking credit for all those hours and years of work that you and your volunteers have done. They've even claimed credit in press releases and even in this last hearing for House Bill 234. What is it going to take for them to give credit where credit is due?
I'm glad you're a good observer. Yeah, so it's been, you know, in addition to the labor of actually tracking, of course, we've tried to work in partnership across other Indigenous nonprofits, state agencies, you know, everyone, because we do believe everyone is a part of the solution. And sometimes, you know, maybe we don't always get credit for the work that we do. But I try to stay focused and know, like, okay, at least it's getting done. And when DPS updated their fields, like you can see in 2021, we made recommendations to build out the definitions of certain data fields. And then you can see in 2023, they did that at the end of the year. You know, I just have to be thankful at least it's getting done, because I hope it benefits not just the investigators who are doing the work, but our community too. And so, you know, trying to put the work first and build trusting relationships where, you know, where we do uplift each other and recognize the work that other people are doing.
Yeah, but still, no.
Yeah. Thanks for seeing us, you know, because it's been years of labor and tracking and people helping, and, you know, put a lot of brain power into like critically analyzing what is sufficient or insufficient data, what are improvements and recommendations that can be made that would benefit all people involved. I mean, that is, it's a lot to analyze. It's a lot to do, especially on like a heart heavy topic, right? Like I can sit here and I'm saying data, but we know these are relatives. And so, yeah, thanks for recognizing that and seeing that, because it isn't easy at all. And I'm really grateful for the people that I'm surrounded with that work with me and are willing to work on this issue, because it's not easy.
Yeah, yeah. Can you tell me about how you and, is it Kendra, started the MMIWG2S working group? Well, first of all, can you tell us what MMIWG2S stands for, and then the history of the group?
Yeah. So MMIWG2S stands for Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women, Girls, and Two-Spirit People. And that's a really long acronym, but we really choose to use that right now in the moment of where we're at to, again, when people ask, it's an opportunity to talk about disproportionate gender-based violence, where feminine identifying people are disproportionately experiencing violence, such as being murdered and homicide and domestic violence, sexual assault. And, you know, we get asked sometimes, and this is, again, why we use this to open up conversation. Of course our men go missing too, right? And of course men experience domestic violence. It's not to say they don't. Of course, sadly, our men have also been sexually abused, and we know that. And that isn't to say that isn't a reality that our boys and men have been facing. But it is to say that disproportionately in a system of like Western patriarchy and where we are at today, is that the deaths that we see in homicide for women and girls as opposed to boys and men are due to violence. And that is a very different death than, you know, we see deaths for environment, for example, right? And so it's an opportunity for us to discuss that and to make clear the ways that gender-based violence operates in our society, and to not shy away from recognizing the ways that women, girls, and feminine identifying people are targeted in our Western society through patriarchy. And so we use that acronym with the intention to highlight that and to make sure we're clear on what gender-based violence is and looks like. And these are the real outcomes that it ultimately leads to: disproportionate rates of death, right, and loss of life. And so it isn't, again, there's no, also we don't want to shy away from talking about the deaths of and the violence that boys and men face. That's not the goal either. But I think before we move over into changing acronyms, like, I think these real tough conversations need to be had first, and then we can, you know, shift that. But so that's why we use that acronym. So I'm glad you asked. And I think, you know, I think as we grow in our understanding as a society about gender-based violence, then we can start shifting that conversation to be real intentional about boys and men too. But I think it just needs to be done in like a really deliberate manner, and carefully, and with lots of conscious consideration.
Yeah, this topic is such a hard topic, but it needs to be talked about so it's not swept under the rug, you know. How can people find information and get involved and participate in the working group?
Yeah, we have a website. Well, we're on Facebook is too. You know, you can find our Facebook page. And then we have a website. It's mmiwg2salaska.org. You can see some of the work we do, resources. There's community toolkits. We have different events happening in multiple locations. I think we actually just put up a volunteer form. So if you want to be on like our list of people to reach out to when we need volunteers, like, people can sign up there, and we'll be developing a newsletter soon. So there's lots of different ways that people can be involved. You know, I tell people, you know, you don't have to always be on the front lines to be making a difference. Like, you doing this, right, you're doing your part by using what you do to contribute and uplift the messaging. And people can do that in lots of different ways. Maybe, you know, if you want to host a walk, an awareness walk in your community, or you want to try to pass a resolution, or, you know, it can look like lots of different things depending on where you live and what your community readiness is. But there's so many ways to be involved and to organize in your own community. And we're happy to share what we've learned, you know, and support people.
Okay, very cool. I thought about, it was very sad when, you know, when the media and the law enforcement, the state, even members of the legislature seem not to take this crisis seriously. You know, even you're talking about when you went to Juneau, even the representative mm-hmm. from Homer, mm-hmm. Alaska, mm-hmm. Sarah Vance, her comments, which basically dismissed the experiences of Alaskan natives. She was asked to apologize, and when she did, she ended her apology with, and I quote, "It is sad that the actions of the minority prove they are not interested in working together for that cause." I mean,
yeah.
Clearly, systemic racism still exists, even in the legislature. How do we get these agencies to take this crisis seriously?
Yeah, you know, the very first presentation I'll uplift, Emily Edenshaw from the Heritage Center flew into Juneau, and on the very first day we're there, you know, we gave a lunch and learn the whole presentation was providing a framework of relationship building and partnerships. And maybe Representative Vance didn't go to that presentation because, you know, I think we came in really clear, and we've also modeled and shown over years our partnerships with the state and our continuance to meet with the state. So I think, you know, that's a wholly misinformed or choosing to not recognize all the work of partnerships that we have done. And it's really clear, as you said, like, right, racism, this is a matter of racism. It was an expression of white fragility that shows how much more work needs to be done at the Capitol and in our state to recognize how the perpetuance of racism, how notions, right, we have these ideas that seem like, okay, they're just ideas, but how notions of less than, like we're less than, they, you know, those are attached to values of humans. They become words, they become actions, and then they become the pervasive justification of subhumanity, of being disposable, that ultimately leads to homicide and death, right? So people might think, oh, it's just words, or, you know, but that right there, those kinds of comments are deadly. They're lethal, right? Because they perpetuate these ideas that we are less than, and that our humanity must remain second to whiteness. And so those are really lethal comments, as I'm saying, like, we can't dismiss that. And in, you know, although it's hurtful and harmful to hear that those were made, and that, again, like, the partnership and the work of building these relationships is being dismissed, I think it's also, you know, this is a time for us to recognize, name, and say, like, what is really happening, and that that is a part of the issue. And that we have a lot of work to do, and let's roll up our sleeves and do it. So it was really unfortunate to hear those things. But I think it's also a good time to unpack how something seemingly small is a perpetuance of the issue of violence, and that those remarks are violent, and that that wasn't a sufficient apology in my perspective.
Yeah, I don't think so either. And you spoke about violence. You know, I wanted to touch on something that's been just like eating away at me, mm-hmm. if it's okay with you.
Yeah.
And this it's about the big case everyone is talking about lately, the Brian Stephen Smith case. Mm-hmm. Brian Stephen Smith murdered Kathleen Jo Henry and Veronica Abouchuk, and he was convicted. But he did not commit these crimes in a vacuum. He texted a man named Ian Calhoun while taking the life of Kathleen Jo Henry. Mm-hmm. And while Ian Calhoun wasn't directly involved in the murder of Kathleen Jo Henry, he knew about it, you know, and he failed to go to the police about this information. And it was just recently found out that the state of Alaska District Attorney Brittany Dunlop and lead detective Brandon Lee are not, and I'm going to say this again, they are not going to pursue charges against Ian Calhoun. Even there is clear evidence of him failing to report a violent crime committed against an adult and hindering prosecution. Mm-hmm. And with Ian Calhoun still walking the streets, there have been many Alaska Native women expressing how unsafe they feel with him walking free. And to me, this is just another example of these agencies not taking this crisis seriously. What are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, someone was sharing that with me, actually, an amazing advocate. I hope and I think you were able to talk to my colleague Antonia Comac, and yeah, we were talking about that, and absolutely, like, that is, it's disappointing, right? And what a swing of emotions. I also just want to pause of, like, these families, like, they've been through so much. Our community has been through so much. And yes, it's like, yes, you know, we have this conviction and it's a huge deal. And at the same time, it's just, it's one of many, many more that need the same. And then these kinds of like, right, these are like salt on the wounds of not having a full, right? We're supposed to just be happy with just the guilty, you know, findings, and then be okay that this person is walking around, right? Like we're giving, you know, being given these quote small wins, and then supposed to just be like, oh, okay, we're all good now, you know, and that's not true at all. And so I'm personally really disappointed in the not pursuing charges. I am, you know, and it's sad, you know. I think it happens with all the cases that we have that are unresolved. Imagine the pervasive amount of individuals out there like him that have information or that have been complacent in violence and not come forward, and that they are not being held accountable, right? Again, if we have this many cases of homicides of Indigenous people that are unresolved, how many people, besides in addition to just the actual individual that took those lives, but how many people know about it? How many people are complacent in that violence? You know, that doesn't make us feel safe at all when we know, especially, you know, exactly what this person did and that they aren't being held accountable, how scary that is.
Yeah, that's something that was just, I had to bring it up because it was eating at me, you know.
Yeah.
Okay. Before we end this, is there anything else that you wanted to get out there?
I just always, every time I can, I just want to, for the families out there who are listening, we see you, we love you, we lift you up, you know, and again, I wish, you know, there isn't, right now, we're advocating for the resources for all the families, and I know it's insufficient right now. But just sending the families lots of love and strength, and thanking them for carrying this. So, and hopefully our orgs can help create the systemic change needed. And yeah, again, just moving in lots of love and solidarity, and we're here for it all until it ends, right? The vision is that we don't have this job anymore.
Yeah. Charlene, thank you so much for coming on the show and using your voice for those who are not able to. So, Koyana Chaknak, from the bottom of my heart.
Hey, Koyana.
Well, that's all for today's show. I hope you, the listeners, found some inspiration, strength, and hope. Listen next week when I have another strong, courageous person on who's walking with us on this healing journey. This program is available as a podcast. You can hear this and many more episodes wherever you listen to podcasts or at anonymouseskimo.com. Join in the Anonymous Eskimo Project, Saturdays at 8:30 a.m. on 95.5 FM WART, the voice of Madison County, serving Madison County, North Carolina. I'm your host, Ralph Sara. Biura!
Native Voice 1, the Native American Radio Network.